Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 46. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steeler site on the internet. And I'm David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. Dave, Week 11 in the NFL, it came at a nice time for the Steelers. We've talked about how often over the course of since they've instituted the bye that the Steelers really seem to be a team that was front-loaded in the schedule, having their bye kind of somewhere between Week 4 and 6. This is the latest the Steelers have ever had it on their schedule. Week 10, it seems like it's come at a nice time and gives us a chance to kind of sit back and watch some football. And yesterday, the marquee matchup for fans of the Steelers was watching the Bengals and the Ravens. The game didn't disappoint. A lot of interesting stuff. Baltimore, kind of as you and I talked about, came away with the win. Looked like they were going to come away with an easy win, up 17 points. But kudos to Andy Dalton. The Bengals have proved they're a much-improved team. They're a solid team. They made a game of it, had the ball late, deep in Ravens territory, didn't get it done. What are your thoughts on that and the rest of what happened yesterday in the NFL?
Yeah, Week 11, really, there are a few things that we were kind of hoping for as Steeler fans, and the top of that wish list that I wrote about the other day, and everybody knows that the Bengals, we were rooting for the Bengals over the Ravens. And the game, you know, I got to hand it to Andy Dalton in this game and the Bengals. You know, they could have very easily folded the tent when they were down big there, but, they kept clawing back. Their defense got to stop. In there, and it looked like, you know, they had a chance to get back in this thing. The big play, of course, that everybody's talking about this morning is the overturned touchdown to Gresham, their tight end there, which, you know, I still don't like that rule, and I don't know. You know, it'd be interesting to see how this thing would have worked out differently had they been rewarded that touchdown and only had to settle for a field goal on that drive at the end of the game there. Although that didn't play out, and we'll go in more into that game in a minute, although that didn't play out in the Steelers' favor, a few things kind of did if you look long-term. The Falcons beat the Titans yesterday, and that puts them – and I believe that puts them in the five loss column there for the Titans. And then the Dolphins, they took the Bills to the woodshed there, and that throws them into five losses column as well. The other thing we're kind of looking at is maybe if the Vikings could somehow get over the Raiders. That didn't happen, of course. But to have the Bills and the Titans now two full games behind the
And let's not forget the Jets getting whacked on Thursday by Denver.
Exactly. Let's not forget that game as well, because that puts them in the five-loss category as well. And, if it comes down to a wild card situation, you know, if all three of those teams were to lose another game going forward, which is really, you know, that's really fathomable when you talk about these three teams. I mean, the Bills right now are a disaster. Don't know who they are.
Well, they got, and some of these teams are going to play each other. So it's going to happen.
Right. So, you know, that really increases the Steelers' chances at a wild card shot more than anything. I think, in fact, it's kind of hard to imagine them not make it. I think they would have to do worse than 4-2. The rest of the way of these last six games, but you surely wanted the Bengals to win that game, but, you know, they didn't, so we'll have to live with it. The Steelers are in second place, although tied with the Ravens at 7-3, of course, because they've lost the series to the Ravens. So it sets up some interesting games going forward. The Ravens got some tough ones on the schedule, and they're kind of Jekyll and Hyde attitude right now. I would say nothing's for sure with them running the table going forward.
Yeah, I think you hit on all the right things, Dave. I mean, let's assume New England takes care of business tonight. They're going to have a two-game lead in the East at 7-3. The Steelers, Ravens, and Bengals, as you touched on, 7-3, 7-3, 6-4. Houston, two-game lead in the South, 7-3. Oakland, a one-game lead in the West at 6-4. I think we can very simply say if the Steelers are able to go into Kansas City and win, and the Steelers beat the Bengals at home the following week, the Steelers are in the playoffs. If they're 9-3, there's absolutely no way they're not going to end up making the playoffs. And if they don't end up making the playoffs, they don't deserve to make the playoffs. So, you know, they're in a perfect position. They're in a very good position to win the division. And, you know, if they win the division, I would say it's probably likely that they'll have home field the whole way through. They beat New England head-to-head. They obviously lost to Houston head-to-head, but Houston's lost Matt Schaub. So if the Steelers can finish ahead of the Ravens in the AFC North, they're in great shape. And you talked about kind of the chaos going on in the AFC. It's going on in the NFC as well. We just don't have a lot of really good football teams. Green Bay has shown to be the cream of the crop, and I don't want to disparage Green Bay at all. This team is 10-0, and that's fantastic. But they've given up a ton of points lately, and they can be scored on. You have a bunch of teams, you know, the NFC East showed how mangled that is yesterday with the Eagles coming back and beating the Giants after the Giants tied it late in New York without Michael Vick. Dallas had to go to OT to beat Washington. We've got Chicago now, a little bit of an issue with Jay Cutler breaking his thumb. They've got three good teams in the NFC North. You have a situation, again, where both North divisions in the NFC and the AFC, things would have to break right for these teams. But it's possible you see three division winners, and then the NFC North and the AFC North both put three teams in the playoffs. It's not likely, but it's possible. Atlanta finally got on the right track, so they're a game behind New Orleans, and the NFC West is a bit of a joke. Seattle got another good win on the road, so they're 4-6. But you know, San Francisco's basically closed that out. So the playoff rate, things are really divided between kind of the division leaders in most divisions and the rest of it. And they're, the Bengals have a real chance to make the playoffs. They're going to have to win a game against the Steelers and the Ravens, though, to probably do it.
Yeah, I agree. And if, the funny thing, it seems like every year this gets earlier and earlier where you start looking at the if the season started today type stuff. Thanks to the internet and all these little programs and things that make it easy to, at a push button glance of what things will look like. I succumbed to that this morning in my sixth round of web and kind of linked to what NFL .com had. And if the season ended today, regardless of what the Patriots do tonight against the Chiefs, the Steelers would be the fifth seed right now in the playoffs, and they would play the Oakland Raiders in the first round of the playoffs, I'm pretty sure. And I think that's kind of regardless of what the Patriots do tonight. But boy, what a difference a season makes where you have the Bengals are also in there as the sixth seed, the Raiders in there at the fourth seed, and then above them you've got the Houston Texans and Baltimore we expected to be there. The Texans, I really think, I think we all agreed that there was a shot that they would be in there. We didn't realize, before the season started how bad the Colts would be, and without Peyton Manning, we didn't think they would be without them the rest, the whole season like they have. So, quite a bit of shakeup there. I would say the Texans really going, before they lost Matt Schaub, this was a dangerous team, and I still think they are kind of dangerous, David. Even with Matt Leinart at the helm, I think they have a great offensive line. Their running game's good, and their defense is good enough. They're getting Andre Johnson back. I think everybody's trying to write this team off and losing maybe three of their last six games, but I'm here to tell you, I think this team could still go 5-1, 4-2 down the stretch, and I think the Steelers need to go 5-1 or run the table to have the shot at the home field throughout the playoffs type scenario here. But it's fun to look at right now. Of course, there's a lot of football left to be played on top of it.
Yeah. Dave, just to look at a couple games, and as we talk about some of these teams, to highlight some things on the schedule, Cincinnati, as we know, they've got a game. Their last game of the season is with Baltimore at home. They've got the Steelers in Pittsburgh 2 weeks from now. So those are two big games on their schedule. But a benefit to the Steelers is the Bengals host the Texans the week after they play the Steelers, December 11th. So one of those two teams is going to lose that game. You have games like that across the schedule. When we look at the schedule for the Houston Texans and who they have with now that Matt Schaub is out of the lineup, They've got this week, they're at Jacksonville, which is not a layup, obviously. Then they got Atlanta at home. That's a tough game. They're at Cincinnati. They finished relatively easily. They've got Carolina at home. They're at Indianapolis. But then they're at Tennessee. So you know, the odds are they're going to lose a game, two, maybe three out of that group. And, again, we talk about what the Steelers have and what these other teams have. And, you know, it starts to get advantageous. Again, you look at the Raiders just in terms of overall seeding about things that they have left to go. They got Chicago this week at home. Then they're at Miami, a much-improved team. They're at Green Bay. You probably chalked that up as a loss. Then they've got Detroit at home. They're at Kansas City. And then they've got San Diego at home. It's conceivable. I think the Raiders are a good team like you do. It's conceivable they lose five of those games. So, you know, you look at the Steelers' schedule and the things going on and who they're competing against for home field, and we'll just throw New England in there so that we've covered kind of the division leaders. And New England's got – they're at Philadelphia this weekend. That'll be a tough game depending on who plays quarterback, what goes on. So they'll take care of business with Indianapolis at home. They're at Washington and Denver. They probably win both of those. But the game with Miami at home, maybe that's a little tougher. Then they get Buffalo at home. So they've got the easy road as well. If you're going to point to the two teams that really, if they win tonight, both the Steelers are 7 and the Patriots would be 7-3. And they both look like, you know, kind of worst case scenario, or at least a very likely scenario, is they both go 5-1 and finish 12-4. But again, remember, the Steelers won that game head-to-head with New England. So I think the Steelers go 5-1. They probably end up with the number one seed in the AFC. That would be my bet. If they go 4-2, a lot less likely. And then, as you said, they could be a wild card, because then the Ravens are probably going to not do worse than 4-2. And we'll all have a keen eye Thursday night when the Ravens host the 49ers in a game that will tell us a lot about both teams. It's going to tell us a lot about the 49ers, because they played a soft schedule so far, and certainly it'll tell us something more about the Ravens, who, without Ray Lewis, gave up 24 points yesterday and a lot of big plays.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about the Ravens on top of this is, which kind of caught me, the line with the 49ers opened up, and I guess it's because coming out west and people maybe aren't fully believing who the 49ers are, but that line opened up with the Ravens at 5. Now, it has settled in at 3, which I guess is believable. But, you know, as good as the 49ers have played this year, they really have not been Jekyll and Hyde. But as you mentioned, you know, they really haven't played the type schedule, you know, as far as toughness goes. They have beat a few decent teams in there, but they have played more consistent than what I would say the Ravens are. So I would think this is a square 3-point home field advantage for the Ravens, and I think it will definitely show us something when these two teams get together Thursday night in Baltimore. And of course, if you're a Steelers fan, you're rooting for the 49ers in this game, because if they don't lose this one, they still have, who do they have left? They have the Chargers and the Bengals. You know, as the two toughest games remaining at that point. So the Steelers kind of need to lose, you know, if the Steelers are going to go 5-1, which I think is the most realistic thing through these last six games, they need the Ravens to lose two games. And, you know, the way the Chargers are playing right now, who ended up losing their fifth straight yesterday, unbelievable. You know, you would think heading into this weekend, you thought, okay, well, maybe they'll recover, maybe this is a team that can give the Ravens a run for their money. I don't know, the further we get, or closer we get to this game, I'm starting to have questions about Phillip Rivers being able to get the job done.
Yeah, no question about that. I mean, they've got San Francisco, they're at Cleveland, they've got Indianapolis at home, they're at San Diego on a Sunday night game. That makes it a little more interesting. They get Cleveland, the first one is Cleveland on the road. They get Cleveland at home, and then they're at Cincinnati. And that game could have been very meaningful the last week on New Year's Day, the last game of the season at Cincinnati. But, yeah, you know, the thing about the Browns is, look, they could certainly lose all four games to the Steelers and the Ravens, and they sit at 4-6 right now. They're not obviously an explosive offensive team. They're a decent defensive team. Both the Steelers and the Ravens would expect to win both those games. They'll both be favored probably, you know, close to double digits at home and at least 4 or 5 on the road. So they're the games these two teams should win, all four of them. But assuming the Browns are going to lose all four is probably a little bit of a stretch. So we'll see what happens there. But you're right about San Diego. They looked Philip Rivers played 45 minutes of good football yesterday, and then was terrible the last 15. They can't stop anybody defensively, and you know, we'll see what happens with San Francisco. But yeah, there's definitely a chance, you know, that the Ravens finish the season 13-3, and the Steelers finish the season 13-3, and it's not out of the question.
Yeah, what did you think about that Ravens-Bengals game yesterday, especially late? Let's circle in on that overturned play there.
Well, all sorts of different things. I think everybody who covers football, everybody who watches a lot of football would say the rule just seems odd in terms of the language of it, the structure of it. There's one thing about catching a ball in the end zone and going through to the ground and maintaining possession, and I don't think anybody has too much of a problem with that. But I saw you on Twitter, and I couldn't agree more. If you catch the ball and you cross the plane of the goal line with the ball and you've gotten both feet in bounds, the play to me is dead right at that point in time. And I know there was some conversation from the former head of officiating, Mike Pereira, I think is how you say his name, talking about that he thought the call should have been a touchdown. I agree with the sense that that if a guy has the ball, catches it outside the end zone, gets both feet down and goes into the end zone, I don't really care what happens after that. The play is dead, just as if you step out of bounds in the end zone. The play is dead at that point in time. So I really, when Grisham stepped out of bounds with the ball in his hand, it's the whole Calvin Johnson thing. The whole rule seems to be silly to me. Now, I do think they're trying to call it consistently, and Andy Dalton handled it very well in terms of in the press saying, you can't complain about it. It's in the rule book. But I think they got to make this an easier call for the referees and for the fans.
And what I pointed out on Twitter is there's that one angle where it looks like he's actually just, he's sticking the ball out over the pylon, yep. And he has control of it. And to me, that makes him no different than a running back doing the same thing.
Sure.
He established control. Now, I can see where they're coming from somewhat with the Calvin Johnson thing, okay? That play happened in the end zone, falling down. He has to maintain possession of the football for predetermined time. I definitely understand that call. I still don't like it as much, but I understand it. With this, I see this as totally different, especially on that one angle that they showed. It looked like he had control of this football, was making a football move with it then to get it up over the goal line. And that's where I thought that was the flaw in this. And evidently, I got blasted by a couple people on Twitter saying, no, that's not, and I was trying to point out that, to me, this is a totally different situation than the Calvin Johnson situation. And I was glad to see Mike Pereira say the same thing. I think even Tony Dungy, not that he's, has anything to do with officiating, but he's been a coach long enough in the league. And he, more than anything, I believe a few years back with Tampa Bay with the, who was that guy, Bert Emanuel or something like that, is where all this rule kind of stem from, I think, with that catch that he had that years ago with the ball moving when it hit the ground and all like
that. In the NFC Championship game against the Rams.
Yeah, good research there. I can't remember the game, but I think it was Bert Emanuel was the player involved in there. But, yeah, if anybody knows about this firsthand, it would be him. And he thought that, this touchdown shouldn't have been overturned. What's funny, too, is you go back to, what was it, two plays before that, I believe on the second down when Terrell Suggs hauled down Andy Dalton. It looked like a horse collar there. And, everybody was on fire about that. And I researched that real quick. And here's another inconsistency. There is no horse collar tackle when a quarterback's in the pocket or between the tackles in the pocket and a runner is between the tackles.
And Dave, I'll tell you why that is. And it's because, particularly in the quarterback situation, is the design on that play is that a guy hasn't broken loose and is, running at a speed where you can't drag him down from behind, and so you're much less likely to cause injury, particularly in between tackles for the quarterback with guys coming from the blind side and how they might reach and grab guys. I think the point is that it's less likely that the momentum of the ball carrier is going to be moving forward in such a way. I'm not necessarily saying I think this is a great idea, but that's the logic behind the call. that you're not jumping on somebody's back and pulling them down and putting all that pressure on his hips in the same way that you might inside the pocket or inside the tackles.
Now, I certainly agree with what you're saying wholeheartedly, but I still think anything
can, the risk of injury is high.
Yeah, the risk of injury is still high there. And if the goal of these horse collar tackles is to prevent injuries, then why wouldn't you take all of it out of the equation? There is my point. And I had to look that up yesterday, so that they don't have any room to complain there. I think most of their complaint is to play two plays later, with the Gresham touchdown. That happened earlier. The play I'm talking about was on the final drive. That's right.
Yeah, the intentional grounding call.
Right, the two plays before the final fourth down play. But I think they do have a right to be, mad about the Gresham touchdown. Here's another thing that I wanted to bring up on this and the horse collar tackle. Joe Flacco last week was fined $7,500 for his horse collar tackle on the Ravens linebacker after the interception there. Okay, did you see that play and see my post on that?
I did not.
Okay, yeah, I've got that up along with the pictures there. He was fined $7,500 for that horse tackle after the interception. Troy Polamalu, of course, we all remember, was fined $15,000 back in week one for his horse collar tackle of Ricky Williams. Explain, and if you look at the guideline of the fines that the NFL has circulating out there, the reported minimum for that fine for a fine for that is $15,000. Why did Joe Flacco only get $7,500? On that. And I've got pictures on that. It looks just as egregious, maybe just a tad less egregious than the Troy Polamalu horse collar tackle. But what sense does that make to fine Flacco $7,500 versus $15,000 for Troy?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Don't know the answer to that.
That's just mind-boggling. They want to know, and I admit sometimes Steeler fans, sometimes we, and with good reason, we get upset, think things are slanted our way, and they have it in for us, fining us, and we get the flags, and with good reason to a point, but it's things like this that happen to other teams that really tend to set, us fans and bloggers over the edge. So I don't know if we're going to get a better reasoning behind that, especially when that fine chart says $15,000 minimum. And if you look at the pictures I have up on SteelersDepot.com, it's about the fourth or fifth, about six posts down on the blog. You can see how egregious both of them look compared, because I have screenshots from both the Flacco and the Polamalu horse collar tackle on there. But I just found that interesting.
Yeah, good job, Andy Dalton, getting them in a position to win. He took the intentional grounding. We probably shouldn't have done it there with the three timeouts. But, the kid's impressive. And I guess, Dave, you've talked about splash plays, kind of the whole turnovers and plays over 20 yards and how that has been so impactful over the course of the last 30 years in the NFL and determining who wins, determining the outcomes of games. Just surprising to me that the Ravens gave up so many big plays, whether Ray Lewis was on the field or not. And we've known their secondary, the corners might be a weakness. Jimmy Smith looks like he got more time yesterday, their first-round pick out of Colorado, than he's gotten any time this year. He got his first pick, I think, did some good things. But, their corners were getting beat deep by guys who were not explosive receivers for Cincinnati. And if I'm a Baltimore fan, it's nice to see Torrey Smith really kind of coming on and maybe being a deep threat that probably not as good a receiver at this point or maybe ever as Mike Wallace is, but somebody who can stretch the field, take the top off, do some good things for them. We've talked about their tight ends and how effective they can be along with Ray Rice. So, it looks like Baltimore's offense is more explosive than it has been in years past for a variety of reasons. But certainly, if you're a Ravens fan, the play of the defense and how erratic they've been in terms of giving up points this year has got to be a cause for concern, just like we've occasionally seen with the Steeler defense, and we saw it a little bit in that Ravens game.
Yeah, if not for a few errors, you know, rookie mistakes by Dalton in that game, it's hard to believe, man. He threw the ball 45 times in that game, 373 yards. He did take the two sacks, you know, which were crucial in there. The three interceptions is what killed him, you know. And when you go along looking at these toxic numbers with explosive plays and turnovers and all, that's something you just cannot turn the ball over in these tight games. Now, as you mentioned, you know, when you have the likes of Jerome Simpson and Hawkins and Andre Caldwell able to, you know, effectively beat, you know, the Ravens secondary. Now, there was a couple of plays I didn't agree with, that Dalton made there. One was before the half there when he decided to go deep on that play, and it ended up being intercepted, I think, in the end zone there. When if you look at the replay there, he's rolled out to the left. He has a blocker in front of him who's tied up with only the defensive player on that side, a field defensive lineman. He could have easily ran for, I don't know if it was 3rd and 8, 3rd and 7, something like that. To me, he could have easily ran for the first down there, lived for another couple of downs, definitely under a minute's time, but they could have come away with a real crucial points in that situation there. He's going to make his rookie mistakes. You know, that one that he threw that he floated up to Ed. You, whatever you do, you don't float the ball up with Ed Reed running around there, and Ed Reed ended up getting him for one of those and all. But the thing about the Ravens that I found so interesting is outside of the numerous screenplays to Ray Rice, Torrey Smith they're pretty much their only offense there. And on that one long touchdown that he had, I don't know what the Ravens defensive backs or safeties in particular were thinking there, letting him get behind them on that play. But, you know, they did a good job of and you got to remember, the Bengals were without Leon Hall in this game, who's out for the year, injured in the Steelers game. Outside from the Ray Rice 5 receptions and 6 by Smith, that was all the Ravens, you know, put up offensively.
Yep. Yep. What else caught your eye this weekend in terms of the games? We mentioned it looks like the big news in terms of the injury front, Adrian Peterson had his ankle. Minnesota was up early in that game and then pretty much got rolled by Oakland, which has shown they can run the ball. And if Carson Palmer gets set in that offense, we've talked about them being dangerous. But the big news was Jay Cutler breaking his thumb. He had surgery this morning. They hope he'll be back before the end of the season. The Bears are not going to get a bye because Green Bay is going to win that division. So they're going to be a wild card team if they make the playoffs. So, you know, tough luck for them because they're playing good football. Jay Cutler's playing good football, and they're a pretty fun team to watch.
Have you seen any word this morning about the Brett Favre name surfacing any, David? I mean, that to me, you know, Mike Martz, you know, he likes – I don't know how close of a fit that is, but it's fairly closer than some of the other scenarios running around out there.
I think the real name that I saw today was Mark Bulger, and I think that's a guy that maybe realistically could step in and add some value. I see zero chance of the Bears looking to a guy who spent time with Green Bay and Minnesota and has been out and just don't see it.
There'd be, I tell you, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think it's going to happen either, but it would not surprise me. I mean, the guy go to yet another NFC North team, you know, it just would not surprise me. I did not think about the Bulger situation, but yeah, having played for Mike Martz before, that would make the most logical choice there. I just don't think Caleb Henney is a guy that you can turn to right now in this situation. So it'll be interesting to watch that. I tell you, we saw Jake Locker kind of get the reins there in Tennessee after Matt Hasselbeck left. I watched the end of that game, and, you know, although not great, you know, he showed a little something in that game for them. All, you know, he had him back within a touchdown of coming back. That game last night, the Giants game, boy, Vince Young, that the beginning of that game, he was just awful, man. But I got to hand it to him on that final drive. The play calling was excellent on that drive for them. And I forget, what was it, 18, 19 play drive to put the finishing touches on that game.
Yep.
And the Giants, Giants offensive line was just pitiful in that game. And Tom Coughlin called him out on that after the game during his press conference, which I thought was the wrong way to handle it. But outside of that, you know, Jacksonville's defense sure looks, even though it was against the Browns, this is a team that if they had any offensive firepower would probably have, you know, a couple of three more wins to their credit going forward here. And I just could not believe what Miami's done over these last stretch of games.
Yeah, the we saw the DeSean Jackson hot dog and stuff again. I mean, you know, he just,
boy, what a moron, huh?
Yeah, not so smart stuff from him. The other thing, Dave, is I've just seen a piece of news. The Steelers obviously are back at it today. Mike Tomlin will have his press conference tomorrow, and a little bit of a surprise to both of us. It looks like Lamar Woodley was active in practice today. I don't know if it was a full go or not, but he practiced today, and certainly. Having Harrison and Woodley both healthy on the edges, having Timmons back inside doing what he does, Ferrier getting healthier, this bye week could have a big effect, and the Steelers could go into this game Sunday with only Manny Sanders really being the guy on the shelf. That, you know, that's awfully good news.
Yeah, the thing with Woodley, what I'm seeing from my buddy Will Graves from the AP saying that Woodley's typical coy self, it says he's day-to-day.
Yep, aren't we all?
But aren't we all, as Keith Overman would say. Looks like Roethlisberger took snaps out of the shotgun pistol formation today. That's not surprising as he's dealing with that thumb. I would be surprised if he got much work today. You know, they're coming back from this bye week. It's pretty much more conditioning, getting back on Monday, where normally Monday's off for them, you know. So Wednesday's going to give us our best look at these guys and who goes full strength. I'm going to stand behind my reasoning that I said back when Woodley went down initially with this injury. There's no earthly reason whatsoever that you do not put him on, I mean, that you put him on this field against the Chiefs if he's not 100%. That you just have, we could beat the Chiefs, who are going to be playing on a short week, who are going to be playing with Tyler Palco at quarterback. There's no reason to have Lamar Woodley active on game day unless you're 100% certain that he's over this hamstring injury. So I'm kind of hoping that he sits, David.
Well, you know, look, I take the view of if a guy's 100%, he should play. And it's just like Sidney Crosby being back tonight. It's if doctors think he's fully ready to go, he's able to go, he goes. If Woodley is recovering at a pace that allows him to come back and be active in Wednesday, Thursday practice, he should go. I don't think you sit guys just to sit them because we, you know, feel like more time is good time. You know, when he's ready, have him be out there. But like you said, we'll see what happens on Wednesday. And if he goes, you don't want to jeopardize and have him out 6 weeks because he re-injures himself. But those are always possibilities. But, you know, you make a decision based on the best information you have. We'll see how Kansas City looks tonight. It'll be fun for Pitt grads and Pitt fans to see Tyler Palco get the start. But I just can't imagine there are going to be a lot of good things in New England tonight. But I also imagine most people in Pittsburgh are going to have their focus on the Consol Energy Center as Sid makes his comeback tonight. And I know I'm going to be there, and that's an exciting thing going on here as well.
Yeah, you know, this game, they've moved it. Versus has the coverage of it as well. So you have to kind of wonder. Now hockey's, of course, bigger up north than it is down south, and the NFL will still override the NHL. But, you know, there's not that much mystery involved in the game tonight, in my opinion, with the Patriots and the Chiefs. I got to admit, I'm going to be watching Crosby, the return of Crosby tonight. I'll have the Chiefs game on in the background, not on the big TV. How big a dent do you think Versus can put into some of these ratings tonight?
It'll be interesting to see. I'm sure the numbers are going to be monstrous for Root Sports in Pittsburgh, and I'm sure they're going to be monstrous for CBC in Canada. I'll be interested to see Versus because, you know, it's early in the hockey season still, and I don't know how much traction it'll get in the rest of the country. But I'm curious to see as well if this, so, you know, there are people who think this will have a higher rating in the U.S. and Canada than Game 7 between the Bruins and the Canucks did. And I got to say, that will be an interesting comparison if that's the case. That'll tell you volumes about the interest in Sidney Crosby and, you know, certainly hockey in Pittsburgh and all that.
Yeah, one thing we saw today, another little bit of piece of news, is it's been confirmed that the Bengals-Steelers game in Week 13 will not be flexed out to Sunday night. I think we kind of already knew that when they left the Chiefs game alone next Sunday night as well. So you don't have to worry about that one getting moved going forward here. So if you got tickets to that game, or if you're traveling, I know some people contacted me during Twitter. Listen, I do not work for the Steelers. I'm not associated with the Steelers. So as much as I like to try to get info out to my readers and people on Twitter, always check the Steelers official website or make the call, to the appropriate places to verify if you're coming into town like that. I would hate to tell somebody something wrong as far as that goes. And it get moved and it ruined their vacation and all. Enough people hate me on Twitter, enough as it is.
and Dave, I'll just throw in terms of getting something wrong, Cutler did not have surgery today. Lovie Smith has said he's going to be out for an extended period of time, will have surgery, but didn't have it today. Other piece of news, Jeff Garcia, Trent Edwards, Kellen Clemens, and Brody Croyle all working out for the Texans to be Matt Leinart's potential backup. And some good news for Viking fans, even though their season's pretty much in the tank. The MRI on Adrian Peterson did show a high ankle sprain, but he may start working out as early as Friday. So I doubt he probably plays this week, but it sounds like it's not something that's going to keep him out for 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's good news. I mean, I like AP. And a lot of people have him in the fantasy leagues going forward, and it's about playoff time there. David, have you ventured into side here for a moment? Have you looked into FanDuel yet? Have you partaken in any of those leagues on FanDuel?
Not even heard of it.
Okay, it's a great site. It's called FanDuel.com, and it's like a weekly. Basically gambling. They have the free side of it where you pick your lineup. It's like a salary cap league where they have dollar amounts to players, and then you have to fill a certain amount of salary cap depending on the league that you're playing in and all like that. And you usually go head-to-head. They have different size leagues, and it's a weekly-type contest. And if you're on the pay side, they do take PayPal. For example, if you're in what's called a $5 entry fee for a 10-team league, if you get in that and you win, you're the weekly winner of that 10-team league, that's $45 in your pocket. And they pay out instantly on that as well. So it's got me hooked. I came across this about 5 weeks ago, I guess. And I usually play about three or four leagues myself every week. It gives you a chance to win weekly money. So for those people that their fantasy line, maybe they're out of their playoffs already fantasy-wise, or their league's winding down, look into FanDuel.com. You're really not going to be disappointed. This site is really, really blowing up.
All right, good stuff. Good information. Good to keep the gamblers. Give them more things to stick needles in their arms. Just what they need.
Being as how my picks have been absolutely awful, man, the man owns me right now. I might have to go back to work, be unretired here pretty soon if I keep having a season like I'm having this year. I just have not had a good year against the man this year.
Yeah, well, I've bounced around a little bit. I felt like I got a gift in Detroit and I to get a push. I feel like I got screwed a little bit with the Ravens, and then I felt good about it, and then I had the the Falcons, and I pushed that one, and that's when I wanted to blow somebody's head off on. Michael Turner fumbling with 3 minutes left on the 7-yard line, up 13, where a score is, going to make it a guaranteed win. And instead, he fumbles on the 7, and Jake Locker takes him 93 yards for a push.
Yeah, I hear you. For those people, as we wind this down real quick, I've got people have been after me to put my 2012 draft needs up. So I put those up over the weekend, I should say, on Saturday. I think I put it up. So make sure you check that out and look what I see with 6 weeks remaining left in the season. And me and David will be getting more into this, along with some salary cap issues and all like that moving forward as well.
All right, Dave, great stuff. Anything to close? We'll be back Wednesday. I'm going to be doing some traveling for Thanksgiving. So Dave will definitely look to have one of the beat writers for the Kansas City Chiefs, given our weekly preview of the Steelers opponent. So we'll get that on. If we can work it out, we'll both be on for that. And hopefully we'll have 20 other minutes of football talk, bringing you up to date with Mike Tomlin's press conference from Tuesday and all other Steelers going on. As always, thanks for listening. If for some reason I'm not on Wednesday, have a great Thanksgiving. Dave, you want to close us out?
Yeah, we appreciate everybody. Follow us on Twitter at Steelers Depot, at Terrible Podcast. Let's get David up to 1,000 followers.
Oh, yeah. Let's not forget that. Right?
I've been trying to work on that, David. At Hammer Speaks, follow him, spread the word. We're accepting emails, as always, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Lots of great feedback. Hit us on iTunes. Let us know what you think as well. We appreciate everybody for listening.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. We'll be back at you on Wednesday.